Welcome to Goodnight Sweetcast, episode 10. That lilting version of Goodnight Sweetheart that you heard playing us in this week.
Taste of the Caribbean.
You've confused lilt and lilting.
Ah.
That was Sonny James from his 1957 album, The Southern Gentleman.
I say.
Very good, Foghorn Leghorn.
Yep. Southern Gent.
That Southern Gentleman you can hear there is Christopher Wallace, and I am Philip Sharman.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to Goodnight Sweetcast, the Goodnight Sweetheart podcast, where we are week by week, or rather fortnight by fortnight.
Or month by month.
No, we are back on track with our release schedule. We will now be releasing a new episode of Goodnight Sweetcast every fortnight, despite our long break over the Christmas period. And today we get to talk about, is it our favourite episode so far?
I think it's my favourite in terms of a standard run-of-the-mill in-the-middle episode. You can show this to anyone and sort of understand what's going on.
Where Goodnight Sweetheart generally is comedy-drama rather than a strict sitcom in the traditional sense of the word. This is a sitcom episode. This is a situation comedy wherein all of the comedy rallies around the situation that poor Gary's got himself into.
He has what I like to call... He has done a Doubtfire.
That's how you're looking at this.
This particular trope that we'll talk about, this idea of being in two places at once, I refer to as a Doubtfire.
Doubtfiring.
This is a typical Doubtfiring.
So where to begin? This is episode 4 in series 2 of Goodnight Sweetheart. Who's Taking You Home Tonight? First broadcast on the 13th of March, 1995. We touched last time on the fact that Marks and Gran, because of the increased episode order of the second series and ongoing series, they were not taking on all of the writing work themselves. The last episode, Just One More Chance, that was the first episode written by somebody else. This episode was the first episode written by Gary Lawson and John Phelps. The pacing of it, you can tell that there's something different going on. And that's not to say that it's not welcome. It's just a very different style of episode from what we've seen. The premise is not going to be alien to anybody who's ever seen any television. The concept of this episode, and it can be summed up in a sentence, Gary has two dates with two different women at the same time.
Calamity ensues.
It's a tried and tested formula.
Oh, yeah.
It is a recognised sitcom trope. There is no doubt about that.
Where did it come from, though? Because I don't think anybody's ever actually done this in reality. This isn't something that you can, if you're writing a comedy, you can go, oh yeah, I did this once. No one did that.
It would be
same day.
You've done two dates on the same day with two different women.
Well, no, not me.
But you can imagine.
But I can do, like a morning date, spot a lunch, afternoon delight, whatever. Then in the evening, go home, you know, have a shower, get the scent of the other woman off you. And then arrive at your next date with lady number two.
That is the practical way of doing it.
For an evening of dancing.
We start the episode in the kitchen that we know and love. Ron and Gary are having a conversation. Gary is, let us remember, pretending that he has got a job with Ron.
At the printers.
He doesn't actually have a job. He spends his time in 1941. But as far as Yvonne's concerned, he's at the printers. And he's got in touch with Ron because all of his lies have got muddled. And he can't remember whether he's told Yvonne that he's in Basildon or Braintree. Thinking up comedy place names, always fun. When you're looking for a comedy place name in the UK, you have to choose somewhere that's kind of middle-sized.
Edgware.
It can't be. You can't choose Manchester.
No.
Manchester's not funny. Birmingham is a bit funnier because Birmingham's inherently funny, but it's not funny enough.
Ipswich.
You wouldn't choose Edinburgh. Edinburgh's not funny. That's too big a place. What you find...
Real
good comedy choice. What you find is that very often when comedy writers are looking for somewhere to talk about that their character isn't actually going to, they will often choose the town of Kettering. It's funny because it's got a hard K. If you don't know, we're recording this podcast in the town of Kettering. It's got that hard K, which is universally thought of as being a bit funny.
It's ultimately meaningless and pointless.
No one really knows about it. It's a bit middling, a bit out of the way, but you're aware that it exists. Personally, if I'm ever looking for a comedy place to say, I always choose Chichester.
It's a good one.
Because it's got that sound to it.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit silly. But Basildon, Braintree and Cheltenham were the three that were chosen for their comedy
names. Just went through the dictionary then.
I spent last night stuck in an air raid shelter with an accordion player who did non-stop George Formby impressions. So I was late getting home, and I'd forgotten the cover story we agreed to tell Yvonne. Now, was I supposed to be working in Basildon or Braintree?
Cheltenham.
Cheltenham?
There's some inherent problems in this plot that they've devised, that he's pretending to go and work for Ron. The biggest and most significant of which is that he's not earning any money.
That doesn't seem to be a problem in general in sitcoms. Going back to the Doubtfire situation, Robin Williams and that lady who is his wife that looks the same age for the last 30 years.
Oh, it's Sally Field?
Sally Field, yes. She hasn't aged. They live in a massive house in San Francisco, and he sort of doesn't really have a proper job. The money is never sorted out. He also organises at the beginning a farm to come around to the house when they dance the House of Pain. So much money is getting spent.
Presumably he's earning some money for his nannying duties.
He hadn't been a nanny at this point. That seed hadn't been planted.
Oh, what was he doing prior to nannying?
Being a terrible dad.
And there's no money in that.
No, absolutely none.
Yvonne's going to notice that there's no cash coming in. Don't worry about it.
We've got the muesli.
She's got all the muesli she needs anyway. Generic muesli box was on the table.
Swiss
style.
I noticed it was Swiss style.
Muesli was a bigger thing in the 90s than it is today. I remember Alpen being everywhere.
Alpen still is everywhere.
It was more everywhere, and it was more ubiquitous in the 1990s.
Was it ubiquitous with the privileged, or was it just like...
I think it made the not-so-privileged feel privileged because of these delusions of being on a ski slope. Off-piste and now I'm going to have some Alpen. That's the way they marketed themselves, and I think it did very well for them.
Rather than I just got out of bed and I want some Cocoa Pops. It's not the life that they wanted to go for.
It's not. It's not quite as aspirational.
No.
Well, even if it does turn the milk chocolatey.
It does. Well, the key, this is the thing, the key with the cereals is to get the variety pack where you have a different one for each day.
That's a very expensive way of consuming cereal. Is that how you live your life?
Of course it is.
What, even when you're not on holiday? I mean, that's a holiday treat, getting a little mini box. You buy them from the supermarket, you buy the mini boxes.
Yeah, of course I do.
That's amazing.
Well, who doesn't do that? That's fun. I live on my own now, I can do what I like, and that's what I choose to do.
But what you could also do, and here's a money-saving tip for you, buy 8 different full-size boxes of those different cereals that are in the variety packs, and just choose a different one every day.
See, no, this is why it's wrong, because I'm choosing the healthier option. Because if I could just buy all Cocoa Pops, I would just buy Cocoa Pops. I have to restrict myself to Cocoa Pops. One of those days, I've got to have the cornflakes. If you buy the variety packs, they force them on you. Just like you have your treat for the Ricicles, and then the next day, oh, it's Rice Krispies, rubbish.
Don't you just pour loads of sugar on the Rice Krispies?
Yeah, you do, but
anyway.
It's not the same as the Ricicles. They put 2 Frosties in the boxes, the packets as well.
2 Frosties?
Yeah, 2 Frosties, because they know what I'm like.
They've got your demographic down. Well, welcome to the cereal podcast. Not cereal, that's a different thing.
Yeah, completely.
Although, I tell you what, if we were to launch a cereal podcast... We'd get lots of accidental subscribers, wouldn't we?
Oh yeah, 100%.
And I think we'd get quite a lot of people that were genuinely interested in talking about cereal.
And I'm by the variety, so there's all the different ones. It's not just that boring.
So what do you get in a variety pack?
You get the Ricicles, the Frosties, the Cocoa Pops, the Rice Krispies, maybe the Honey Loops. I haven't had a crunchy nut in a while.
Are they maybe not in the variety pack anymore?
Maybe not anymore.
Because I think that the variety packs are kind of for children, and I don't think
they're not for
like
children.
I'm sorry.
They're not for children. They're for adventurous adults.
I feel as though we've gone off topic a little, but at the same time, it's important for the listener to understand who it is that they're listening to.
Sometimes I have a banana.
Nobody thinks you only eat variety packs.
No, good, I'm just checking.
Oh, that would be amazing. You'd go to your house, open the cupboards, and it was just stuffed with variety packs and nothing else in the whole house.
No, well, I'd be fine.
They're fortified with vitamins and iron, so you'd be okay.
So I'm so strong.
I honestly couldn't tell you the last time I ate a ricicle.
It shows.
Because of my lack of strength, my lack of fortification.
Yep. So you're not a spaceman like the guy in the box.
Oh, I wonder if he's got a name, that little ricicle man.
Richard.
What were we talking about? We were talking about Yvonne's muesli.
Oh, they're not in the pack. Boring.
Bit too expensive, I think, as well.
It's not. It just comes in a bag. Boxes are where the money's at.
What?
Boxes are what makes it very expensive. Any cereal that comes in like a loose bag, that's cheap. That's nasty. Like porridge, oats.
Porridge oats are cheap because they're just oats.
As the basics, cornflakes, they come in like a bag.
But muesli's not cheap.
That's when you're on the bread line.
Muesli's not cheap.
I think it is.
Oh, we're spending a lot more time talking about the muesli than I was expecting.
That's interesting.
We'll let the listeners decide. Please write in and tell us your favourite cereal. Is your favourite cereal now the same as it was in 1995 or 1941?
What did they have? Kippers.
Not a cereal. Oh, Kipper flakes with milk.
That's what I imagine.
They've had cornflakes by then? Yeah, Kellogg was the turn of the century, wasn't he? He was a strange man. Do you know why cornflakes were invented?
Oh, I've heard this before, but I can't remember.
It's to take people's minds off of masturbation.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that.
He had like a sex clinic, and it was like a clean living health retreat place. And one of the things was that masturbation was very bad for you, and you should keep all your thoughts clear and clean. Here's some cornflakes to help with that.
Okay. That's an idea. I suppose you can't have a go in yourself if you're eating cornflakes.
You make a mess.
So, in theory, should we talk about the programme?
Let's talk about Goodnight Sweetheart, if anyone's still listening. The upshot of the fact that Gary is using Ron as an excuse and going off to 1941 is that he keeps coming home really late because he's philandering. And then he's blaming Ron for working him too hard. Poor Ron.
Yeah, Ron takes it all on the chin, though. He's fine with it. He wants to keep up the charade. There's another theory, though, isn't there?
That Ron is doing this because he quite likes Yvonne and he's unhappy in his marriage with Stella. So if he can fob Gary off onto Phoebe, which is the better option, then Yvonne is ripe for the taking. Is that a phrase?
It's a bit of a mixed metaphor. I think ripe for the picking is what you're looking for, but that sounds much worse. As men, we should shy away from describing women as fruit.
It's not right, is it? Okay, she would be emotionally available.
Better. Yeah. That's better. She would be emotionally available and he could get his leg over without her.
Exactly.
It's probably how he would phrase it.
Mm-hmm.
But Yvonne's not very nice to him.
Maybe he likes it.
Maybe. Yvonne's really not happy about it. She's very cross with Ron for working Gary so hard. She wants to make up her mind. She was all about him being lazy and not getting a job last week.
I know, and now he's working too hard. Yeah.
God, if I was married to her, I'd definitely have an affair.
Yeah, definitely, with a woman from the 40s.
Without a doubt. Definitely all Yvonne's fault. We talked about Muesli, and we didn't talk about the most staggering fact about the Muesli from the show, and that is how Yvonne likes to eat her Muesli normally.
In the buffet.
As God intended, yes. Was her actual phrase. So normally, if Ron hadn't have been there,
she would be completely starkers.
We'd have had a naked Yvonne.
Oh, I can tell you my story about naked cereal.
Okay.
I used to live in a house with my friend, and his girlfriend moved in at one point, and I was going to work one morning, and I forgot my keys and came up the stairs and she was watching GMTV. I'm completely naked, but her nipples were covered by a bowl of cereal. Never been able to look at her since.
There's something a bit Last Days of Rome about people eating cereal in the nude.
How women like their cereal in the nude. I like mine in a business suit.
You're going to dribble a bit of cold milk on yourself.
Part of the eroticism.
Do you think that there was eroticism involved?
I don't want to make up stories about them, but maybe that's part of their
role play.
Their role, yeah.
She was pretending to be Richard unemployed.
She was pretending to be on the dole. But yeah, like we were saying, women like to eat cereal in the nude. From my studies, I've learned that now.
I've never eaten cereal in the nude in my life.
I'm sure I have. What are we doing?
Nothing's happened yet. Nothing has happened, except we have established that Gary's having a carry-on in the 1990s pretending that he's got a job, but he's not having much fun. Him and Yvonne are still not on great terms. Cut straight away to 1940, where he's having a whale of a time.
Running away from the law.
Him and Phoebe, they're just like giddy school children.
Carefree.
Uh-huh. Scampering around through the markets of the East End.
Evading the police, murdering,
No, I don't think they were murdering. It wasn't immediately clear why they were running away from the police, but it was a nice action shot of the two of them ducking behind a market stall to avoid the fuzz.
And then Phoebe looked down at hands covered in blood, shaking. What have I done, Gary? Gary, what have we done? Don't talk about it, Phoebe!
No, that's not... I think you've misinterpreted what was happening. I mean, she was wearing a red top. Is that what you thought?
Blood.
No, it wasn't. No.
She's
all
just
they'd done.
Covered in it.
All they'd done is they'd knocked the hat off an ARP warden. It's different. No. They hadn't been on a massacre.
That's not how it came across to me.
Oh.
Tears running down his cheeks. Leave it, Phoebe.
We can't go back.
We can never go back. That would have been more interesting. But no, they just knocked the hat off the man.
Hijinks in the 1940s.
And as we all know, this obviously worked because he got a peck out of it. Quite a big kiss out of it.
He got a snog. This was a snog.
As we all know, women love crime.
Women love a bad boy.
Mad for it.
They love a bad boy. And what Gary's done here is he has put himself in a kind of James Dean rebel without a cause type scenario here, where he's just a boy from the wrong side of the tracks. He doesn't care whose air raid patrol warden's hat he knocks off.
He doesn't give a shit. Just like when I bring a girl home and she sees how many letters I've got from EE that I haven't paid my phone bill. Whew.
They love that shit.
They love that. He didn't pay his bill. Women love a bad boy.
He doesn't need to buy whole boxes of cereal. He can just use a different one every day because he plays by his own rules.
Yeah. cavalier attitude to cereals and mobile phone contracts.
Who doesn't pay their phone bill by direct debit? What?
I don't trust direct debits.
You don't trust direct debits?
This is... Okay. I like to ring up and pay everything. Not everything. Some things are fine. Like rent, some bills, like electricity.
Electricity's
I trust
okay.
Electricity. But some things, like phone bills, I don't trust them. So I don't set up a direct debit. I just ring them up the day before and say, I want to pay what I want to pay.
But then you sometimes don't.
Probably why I partly do it. Sometimes I don't want to pay.
Because the ladies love it.
Because the ladies love it. I do it all in the name of love.
I'm seeing you in a different light because this devil may care attitude that you've got towards EE. EE. Sounds like everything everywhere, you know.
Mm.
Isn't that awful?
That's another reason why I don't want to pay them. Everything everywhere. Don't watch me, big brother.
That's a terrible acronym. You've called yourselves everything everywhere and you're calling yourselves EE. That's awful.
Yeah.
It's not the worst one I know.
What's the last one?
B&M stores. Do you know what B&M in B&M stores stands for?
Bargains and Snuff.
Bargains is correct. Fair enough. They're a cut price high street store. B&M stands for Bargains and Madness.
Well, yeah.
What?
Bargains and Madness.
Bargains and Madness. That's what B&M stores is all about.
Makes sense. Chaos. Chaos in those shops.
We're not doing well. Given that this has been like our favourite episode, we've really enjoyed it. We were really excited to talk about it. We've barely scratched the surface of what's going on.
I was actually in B&M the other day and they put their toilet roll in really weird places next to all toys. It's an odd shop, so the madness makes sense.
1940s, we're in the market. The set design's so good, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, it's really nice. We watched the episode twice, once with the commentary and once without. And so when you're watching it the second time, you kind of notice little bits in the background you didn't before, including the old lady paying for a veg.
She's really happy about it.
It was a very protracted and very rehearsed and very just prolonged transaction that was going on in the background. And this beautifully made, I mean, I was trying to, because I'm a terrible person, I was trying to pick holes in the authenticity of the what they'd got on their veg stalls and how it all looked. But they'd done a bang up job. It looked absolutely spot on.
Yeah. Lettuces were there, some marrow.
Marrow, that's wartime. If any veg is wartime, it's going to be a marrow, isn't it?
Big on marrow.
Well, they're so efficient. You get a lot for your money, don't you, in a marrow?
Yeah, I never bought one.
That doesn't surprise me. They don't make fun-sized marrows. Well, they do. They're called courgettes. So, yeah, it's just a really well-constructed environment that the world is in the 1940s. It feels more believable and more of an immersive than the 1990s did. And you'd have thought that they'd have been doing that from first-hand knowledge. Let's get this plot underway. What's going on? Phoebe wants to make Gary dinner.
So it's invite him up at the flat above the pub. Yep. I imagine that's where she lives.
Well, I assume so. We've not. It's never... Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah. 8 o'clock sharpish for some 40s dinner, which I think means sex.
Well, and she dinner. Says, because Gary's very much... What will the neighbours think? Although we've already established that he's been there till late every night this week, so the neighbours must have something.
And he's sniffing around her like no one's business.
Phoebe says she's past caring what anyone thinks, and she thinks that most people already assume they're at it like rabbits, so why not?
And she was just doing crime, so she didn't care anymore.
Which, I imagine, you kind of think about the past as being really prudish and... really conservative about these kind of things. But in real life, it can't actually have been like that. And you know that a lot of it's just made up nonsense. Like,
no more different than now.
The notion that the Victorians were so easily scandalised that they'd cover up piano legs because they were... No, that's nonsense. None of that happened. You kind of sanitise the past and think that people weren't aware. Yeah, of course, people knew that was happening. And where was the harm in it?
There was probably some harm in it.
Well, yeah, because there is some adultery happening. There is harm in it, yes. If there wasn't, because as far as anybody else is concerned, there isn't any of that going on, then there's no harm in it. Where am I going with this? Can we talk about cereal some more? Gary says, yes, I will happily go to dinner with you. We will have some 1940s nosh.
Horrible, horrible food. I just imagine
marrow.
It's gross.
It's marrow. It's going to be just a plate full of marrow.
I just like old people dinners. I hate old people dinners.
Both types of marrow.
Yeah. Just really tough meat.
Oh, here you go. Here's a slice of pork pie.
Swede. It's horrible.
Oh, congealed gravy.
Yeah, just in old crappy like plates with flowers on them. And doilies. I just don't like the idea of old people dinners. I never like grandparents' dinners. Sorry, grandparents out there. Mm. But your dinners are probably rubbish.
Oh, my grandma always used to make, because she didn't know what to do with my vegetarianism, which is fair enough. So she always used to make me an omelette. She couldn't cook omelettes. How do you not cook an omelette? So I used to get an omelette that was just raw on the top.
Exactly. Old people can't cook. That's a good TV programme. Can't cook too old.
Mary Berry is an old lady and she would disagree with what you're saying.
Yeah, that's true. But she's a baker.
You're saying if you had to make a dinner, she'd struggle.
No,
I'm and not she'd end that up boiling some chicken.
She's a rare breed. I just think, on the whole, most old people can't cook. That's a pretty big statement to make, and I made it.
We at the Goodnight Sweetcast aren't afraid to go there with the controversial opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at what Gary's going to be getting for dinner later on, I'm kind of with you.
But she was a young woman then.
I don't think old people know how to cook and then gradually forget as they get older.
I don't know.
And their love for marrow fat peas just develops when they hit 60. I don't think that's the thing. And then you see some people, Vera Lynn, 100 years old, releasing an album. Mm. It's just what she's doing. Vera Lynn, she's 100. I mean, it's probably not like...
Very good.
Probably not very good. And it's probably not. It's probably kind of more of the same. She's probably going to be doing White Cliffs of Dover on it, isn't she?
Yeah, it's not Gaga, is it?
Oh, it'd be amazing if she collaborated with Gaga.
It would be good.
Who wouldn't want to see that? So they're arranged for dinner at 8 o'clock sharp. I'll start boiling the marrow fat peas now.
Yum.
And then we need a punchline to this scene.
Oh, is it the man in the hat?
It's going to be the angry ARP warden whose wife they just murdered.
Yeah.
It was a good punchline. It was a good out. The scenes all felt constructed and it needed something to seg into the next thing. And a grumpy old man in an ARP uniform who happened to be quite short. That's funny. I can't say that isn't funny, but because that is funny.
It didn't end the way I expected. Like, I often think Goodnight Sweetheart's going to end where Gary slowly walks to the gallows.
Right, back to 1995, and we have established, in fact we did this in the opening scene, we have established what will become a running gag, and running gags are always fun, whereby Gary Sparrow does not like George Formby, does not like him one bit. More to come on that. I'll watch this space for more George Formby stuff in weeks to come.
I don't care about George Formby.
I think George Formby is fucking awesome. Do you want to know why?
Go on.
He and his wife were very, very active in the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa long before it was fashionable to do so. He went to South Africa to perform because he was popular down there, and he got booked into all of these whites-only venues and he refused to play in them.
Oh.
And then he went instead while he was down there and toured around all of the shanty towns and the black districts of South Africa. Oh. So that's why I love George Formby.
Fair enough.
And he was very vocal on the subject as well. More power to his elbow. And his songs are really fun.
I knew the one about Wendos.
I bet you actually know more than you think you do. Mm. If you were to listen to more George Formby, you'd be surprised.
I don't want to because I'm young and cool.
Mm. You keep that dream alive.
Variety pack cereals.
What we've got, the purpose of this scene is to witness Gary's inner monologue.
Yeah.
So he's having a little conversation with himself.
As he often does.
He's already been told that Yvonne is going off to a wine and nibbles party that evening.
Yeah, that seems like a 90s thing.
I don't even think it was a 90s thing. I think that was something they made up especially for the show. Wine and nibbles.
Yeah, just like cheap wine, cheesy puff crisps. So probably someone's got some crackers and cheese. Breadsticks.
Breadsticks, maybe, yeah. I think you've gone a little bit low rent with your cheesy puffs.
I would have cheese puffs in mine.
Yeah, I think that she was anticipating something a little bit classier than you having put out little bowls of ricicles, dry ricicles, for people to nibble on.
That's a thought that no one's had before, and I think that would be quite good as a little buffet treat. Having a little bowl of dry cereal.
What's your favourite dry cereal? Straight out the packet, From the Fist cereal.
From the Fist. which one would I go for? I don't want to say just Cocoa Pops because that's just so boring. But
I wouldn't like it. I don't like a raw Cocoa Pop. I don't mind a raw Cocoa Pop in milk, but not raw. No, raw Frosties. Yeah, you got to enjoy raw Frosty.
Oh, Nesquik.
Nesquik cereal.
Yeah, the little chocolate balls.
That's practically sweets anyway, isn't it? Yeah.
Don't get them in the multi packs.
I wouldn't recommend raw All Bran. Yvonne's gone for wine and nibbles.
Yeah.
So therefore, Gary is saying to himself, well, she's gone for wine and nibbles. If she's whining and nibbling on some guy's ear... Whining about him and nibbling on some guy's ear.
Completely misinterpreted the party.
That's what he's jumped to. Ergo, because she's whining and nibbling, ergo, I can quite legitimately go to 1941 and shag a barmaid.
Yep.
Ergo. No, Gary, no.
He does do that, though. He does have that...
This is fine. I am so hard done by, I deserve better.
He does the maths in his head and thinks this is fine.
Just righting the wrongs of the universe. There's quite a recurrent theme in this episode, actually, certainly from Ron's perspective. Mm. Ron makes out that by Gary carrying on the way that he is, he's committing some kind of grand gesture on behalf of all mankind. Well, yeah. No, not all mankind, the male half of mankind.
Yeah.
Which is some flawed logic, but we'll come on to discuss that more, I'm sure. Yeah, why should I feel guilty? She's gone off for a wine and nibbles. I'm going to do this. And I'm in the right. That's about how it goes.
That's it.
And then Yvonne turns up.
Surprise.
Surprise. I don't really feel like going for wine and nibbles. I'm a bit glum because of our relationship. I don't like it. PMT!
Of course.
Definitely lady problems that are causing you to feel this way. But I like the fact that they addressed it and said, no, don't be stupid. That's a ridiculous thing to say. And it's really offensive to women to say that it's menstrual stuff that's making them be unhappy.
No, sometimes it's just mean for no reason.
Exactly. But what you have to be in those circumstances is just be a bit more of a bad boy around them. Just treat them a bit meaner. Maybe...
Don't pay their phone bill.
Maybe don't pay their phone bill. It's an option. Maybe, I don't know...
Slash their tyres.
No, that's not the kind of bad boy they like.
Oh, okay, right. Get them fired from their job.
No, you're not good at this. After what we talked about last time of Gary apologising out of character, they addressed that quite nicely in this episode. And it's a very good joke and it sums up Gary's attitude quite nicely. Because he apologises again off the back of the PMT conversation. He says, I'm sorry. And he says it quite sincerely. And he says it quite nicely. And to which Yvonne says, what for? I don't really know. I just thought it was the best course of action. That's Gary. That's Gary right there. Yes, that's the circumstance where he might apologise. But it's not through any sort of self-awareness or wanting to improve.
But he is right. Situation. 9 times out of 10, yeah, he probably should be sorry for everything he does.
But if he hasn't identified what the apology is for, it's kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
What it boils down to is Yvonne wants to know if all of this time that Gary is spending away at work, is it really just an excuse to not have to spend time with her? He wants her to know that that isn't the case, but doesn't want to take any responsibility for his actions either. Needs a scapegoat.
Who's the best scapegoat?
Who is his designated scapegoat?
It's Ron.
It's always Ron, isn't it? With neither buy nor leave, he doesn't hesitate to drop Ron in it and says, you know, all those things you were saying about him being a terrible boss, they're all true. It's got nothing to do. I would love to just be spending my time with you, but Ron won't let me. He's the worst boss ever. Yvonne wants him to stand up to Ron and prove their dedication by taking her out for dinner. Tonight at 8 o'clock.
No, not tonight.
This can't work. Oh,
why didn't you do something else? What? Have lunch.
Nude breakfast. Just have your nude breakfast. We love this concept. We don't care that this isn't the first time that this has been attempted. We don't care about how brazen and ridiculous it is. It's a great idea, and we have real fun with it. If anything, it's a little over-explained. Because at that point where Yvonne says, I want to go for dinner, it must be tonight, and she's unshakable in that. At that point, we understood what was happening. And I don't know whether this is a modern audiences are slightly more sophisticated in their understanding of story thing, which we've touched on before, where we think in the past, in Goodnight Sweetheart, they've had to over-explain the time travel stuff. And Gran and Marks in the commentary had explicitly said that they didn't think people would get it. Whereas today, I can't see anybody having a problem with understanding the fundamentals there. I think we could at this point have cut straight to the date and understood what was happening, that two dates were going on at the same time. But instead of that, what we get is a trip to the printers so that Gary can talk it through with Ron and they can come up with the plan and explain it in detail to the audience.
Handholding.
It is a bit of handholding. I don't think it's bad. I didn't feel patronised by it. It's maybe a little redundant. The scene was still funny in its own right and had got something to say in its own right, albeit something quite odd in terms of Ron's taking from the situation.
Yeah.
Because he at this point was thinking, we are doing something for men here. We're making a stride for men being able to get what they want for once in their lives. So I can't, it's some not bullshit. Joined up thinking. It doesn't make any sense. I can't work out why Ron is so gung-ho about this.
Stella. The flip side of that, rather than maybe hand-holding, it's reminding the audience that these characters are stupid. So it's not saying the audience is stupid, it's just we might be able to jump ahead, these two idiots.
But Gary needs to join the dots first.
He needs to join the dots and needs Ron to help him. And they need to actually see the workings of this psychopath to understand how broken he is as a human.
There is something very telling in Gary's position during this conversation as well, because he very much wants it to be known that he is not a chauvinist, which is a weird word that doesn't get used very much anymore. Mm. He doesn't want to be seen that he's treating these women badly. He is evidentially treating these women badly. By the definition of bad women treating, that is what is happening, but not in his mind. And he specifically quotes, at least I'm not like Oliver Reed. If I was Oliver Reed, I would just be bonking them both.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't care and it wouldn't matter. Well, that's not in any way removed from what you're doing.
No.
He might be a little bit more honest about this and wouldn't be pretending that he didn't have a wife somewhere. That makes him better than you, not worse than you.
Hmm. At least he's been upfront about this is what I'm like.
Yeah.
Gary is pretending to be something that he's not.
So poor Oliver Reed, getting a bit of a bum deal here, I think.
Hmm.
Poor Oliver Reed, that's not a phrase that gets used often.
He does think that he is doing the best thing for both of these women because he doesn't want to let them down. He doesn't want to disappoint them. When actually they go into all this effort for him, it's probably better to let them down rather than have Phoebe use up all her shit dinner that she's probably got to save for stuff.
Yeah, that's it. 3 months worth of Marifat pea rations.
Exactly. That's a lot of food to her.
Ron is cock-a-hoop about this plan. He thinks it's the best thing ever.
Well, you see, he's giddy.
He is. He's like, yeah, we can do this. This is a victory for us here. If we can pull this off. That's kind of what you want, because that's the mood that you want the audience to be in about what's happening. And so getting somebody to say, this is a great idea, it's going to be really fun, I'm looking forward to it, it kind of tempers expectations. And I think that, I'm changing my mind on this not being a useful scene. I'm backtracking.
Mm.
I think, yes, you could have not had it, but in actual fact, it does do some useful stuff.
Mm.
And I'm reversing my former position, and I'm saying that this is a good scene in The Printers.
You're right, actually, because the alternative would have been cringe. It's also embarrassing for the audience and it makes you want to turn away rather than engage.
So here we are in the Indian restaurant.
Where was it? It was in Duckett's Passage, wasn't it?
This was right next to Duckett's Passage. So we've gone to the East End. So
Duckett's Dal.
Gary's taken Yvonne on the date that he promised her. He's taken her right the other end of London.
I've heard loads of things about it. It sounds great. Duckett's Dal.
The first thing that they do is apologise for how empty the restaurant is because they've not had any publicity about it. Like, how do you know about this place, Gary? Why have you made me come all this way? We meet the waiter, who we learnt in the audio commentary was a very, very nervous actor who really struggled with the role, which I thought was quite an interesting bit of insight.
I didn't notice.
And apparently Nicholas Lyndhurst did a lot to make him feel at ease, which was nice. Nicholas Lyndhurst seems like a nice chap, doesn't he?
He does.
The restaurant's very empty, and the waiter says, yeah, we've been struggling to get word of mouth out. We've been open for 18 months. We've been word of mouth. We could really use some leaflets.
Ah, leaflets. Printing? Gary's a printer now. Yvonne's working all this out on the fly. Thinks, business deal. You know, I'll get a curry. And also, Gary can get some work in.
Gary's like, I've got enough to worry about. Mm. I've got an elaborately concocted scheme underway here. I don't need this as well. It's a nice way of catching him out, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all very fitting and adds an extra layer to proceedings, which is good. He wastes no time at all in explaining that he's got a bit of a dodgy tummy and needs to know where the toilet is and off he goes.
Got that in early.
There's zero effort to make Yvonne have a nice time. There's nothing.
Whenever anybody says they're feeling unwell before they go out, that can be true. It can be just a way of someone informing them that I might leave. It could be bad. It could be like, I might leave because I don't want to be here. Or I might leave because I'm going to feel sick and I'm going to be terrible company. So he's already starting the evening off badly. And also, the curry's not going to help.
Yvonne makes the same point.
We could just go back home. I've got kidneys defrosted.
So he's like, I've got to go to the toilet. Off he goes. Like, no attempts to make Yvonne have a nice evening and to prove to Yvonne that she's worth something to him. Just straight away, off he goes.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, I have to go and unleash hell in the bathroom.
He's come prepared. He gets to the bathroom. Very conveniently has a window exactly where it needs to be.
Brilliant.
Relief. Because he
could have scoped that out beforehand.
Probably should have. Didn't really have time though, because this all happened very quickly. It was only the same afternoon that Yvonne decided this has got to happen. So he's very lucky here, because I can't remember the last time that I was in anywhere with an escapable window attached to it. Not just a restaurant bathroom, but anywhere. Because that's not what you want if you're any sort of business, is to have a window that people can just get in and out of.
No, I'd always be escaping.
Thankfully, for the progression of the plot, the window is present. He's gone to the trouble of bringing a Walkman with him with a couple of speakers with pre-recorded toilet noise on them.
I don't make any of those sounds. Nobody does that.
Go away, this is occupied.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that you're just inviting interaction from outside that you're not going to be able to respond to.
Yeah.
But still, it shows that he's thought it through and he's
yeah, time to record this. So
he went to the trouble of doing that. Out the window he goes, meets Ron in the car park. Ron's got him a bottle of wine.
In his disguise. He's all decked out and he's got a hat on.
Ron's wearing a disguise for no reason at all. Because he fucking loves this plan. Mm. He is in love with this plan and he wants to give it his all. What we do get from Ron is another intricate explanation of exactly what's happening. Mm. Just in case you haven't got it.
Keep up to date.
We get another explanation of there are two dates going on at the same time. That is definitely surplus to requirements at that stage. Off he goes to 1940. Phoebe's looking lovely.
She always does.
It goes without saying, doesn't it?
Even though the house probably smells.
Probably does, because she's cooking soup. Homemade soup is not a recipe for a nice-smelling house.
She's specifically what she calls oyster soup, which is just cod heads.
She calls it MI5 soup because it's you don't really want to know what's going on there.
Secret jokes.
He set up his excuse for why he needs to keep nipping off. He needs to use the phone box around the corner to make contact with work, which is a better excuse than needing to go to the toilet, because it would explain being away for longer periods, even if you have pre-recorded a tape of pooping noises. He brings out the bottle of wine, and I would like to make the whole setup this week's joke of the week, just the whole overall premise, but we can't play a clip of the whole setup. So instead, I think we'll make the unveiling of the wine this week's joke of the week.
Look, let's open the wine, eh?
I've got a corkscrew in the kitchen. Gary, this wine?
Yeah, well, I know strictly speaking we should have red with dark meat, but I don't think it really matters, do you?
Well, to hell with the colour, it's German.
I'm going to kill you, Ron.
Who's Ron?
Ron's my wine merchant. He's obviously got lumbered with the stuff and tried to fob it off on me. Sorry.
You ought to report him. He could be a fifth columnist.
No, he's not. He's just very, very stupid.
It's nice because, yet again, Ron's getting it in the neck. Poor Ron.
His task was to go and pick up some wine.
He did his best. He didn't have to do any of this for you. You could have gone to Thresher's yourself.
Too busy making Ron's these recordings. And
yeah. Got his scapegoat to do all of this for him. We get a little nod to Eric. Remembering Eric picks up a photo of Dad.
Dad. Remember when you were all in one bit?
So that's a nice little throwback. We've not forgotten about him altogether. And then we sit down for the soup. So he's been gone for ages at this point. This is a long time to have been in the toilet. It's mock oyster soup.
Gross.
Is this changing your mind for old people food at all?
No, still gross and smelly.
This particular soup is made of cod's heads and whale bits.
Whale bits?
Mm.
Or bits?
Best not to ask, I think.
The fin.
Which, to me, I mean, this is mock oyster. I feel like even in wartime, oysters would be easier to get hold of than whale. I figure if you've got your big ships out there whaling, they could be better used for the war effort.
But there's this thing, isn't there, with seafood. Like, if you go to the supermarket, you get these things that they call seafood sticks. God knows what's in that.
Cod's heads and whale bits.
Maybe it's the same. Maybe she just sprinkled some of them in some, like, chicken soup.
Yeah, nice 1940s soup. It was a thick thing, wasn't it? Because he wolfs it down. And he's so good. Nick Lyndhurst is so good. His delivery of this, of I'm eating this quickly because I've got to get going, but I can't really explain this to you. It's funny. It was funny.
Not pleasant to watch.
No, because there's a lot of soup, fish soupy dribble going on.
It's quite a thick cream.
But he does such a good job of delivering it and then dashing out the door to go and make a phone call. And back to Ron. Criticises Ron for the wine, waiting to get back into the Indian restaurant. And he hears that his Walkman, he didn't record enough toilet noise. Oh, I should have grunted a bit longer into that microphone. It's turned to whatever music was on beforehand.
Some nondescript music.
But we found out something interesting about that music. Thanks to David Jones on Facebook for pointing this out, this little snippet of fact to us. And that is that on the original broadcast, the music that was playing that Gary had decided to tape over was very clearly Cliff Richard, the We Don't Talk Anymore song. Are you familiar?
Nope.
I'm so sorry that we don't talk anymore.
I knew now.
But they couldn't get the rights for the DVD, so the version that we saw, it was just some anonymous plinky-plonky noisy noise.
Gary's theme.
I'm a little bit worried that obviously they're very tight on their copyright about that. That little bit that I sang.
It's very close. It's very accurate.
It was, wasn't it? Are we going to be in trouble for that? I might need to beep out the whole of my singing there.
Possibly.
It might be for the benefit of the listeners as well.
I wish I could beep out.
Apparently, in the original airing, Gary delivers the line, "Shut up, Cliff," as he turns it off. That would have got a laugh out of me. Uh-oh, more problems. In a hurry to turn off the Cliff Richard that isn't Cliff Richard. He's only gone and put his foot in the toilet.
It's just one thing after another.
Isn't it just? He didn't notice it immediately. I mean, yeah, he was in a big hurry to turn off the music, but he got to do all of that before noticing that he'd put his foot in the toilet. And for the entire time that he was taking down the tape recorder, he had got his foot in a toilet.
Maybe he's got an illness, like Robert Carlyle in that James Bond film. He doesn't feel pain.
It's a big leap to make.
Oh, I'm going there. Just a thought.
So now he's got a wet foot on top of everything else. That's fine, having a wet foot. No one's going to notice about that, are they? You can just keep that hidden. What possible scenario in which
I
would
there
be?
Notice if someone came out of a toilet in an Indian restaurant and their foot was wet, and I would point at them, and I'd get all my friends to point, and I'd be a bully.
That's as maybe. But the way Yvonne finds out, playing footsie in a really creepy way.
Yeah, I don't feel like that's something you need to declare. If you're doing the foot thing with someone, then that's like a secret amongst the footie.
The footsie.
The footsie, yeah. That's like
is that what the footsie 100 is?
Same thing. It's like a secret amongst the footsies. They give like a knowing wink. So nobody else around you knows that the footsies are going on. But you don't declare it. No one declares a footsie.
It's a weird point at which to initiate a footsieing anyway. The date's not going well.
No.
It's not like, oh, things will perk up with a bit of footsieing.
Initiates the foot.
It's a strange thing to do generally, but it is very pleasurable, isn't it? If you're out with some with a significant other.
It's the secret. The sort of secret element of it.
Because it's not a sexual act. There is no way of just the two of you.
Isn't it?
There's no way if it was just the two of you and things were getting amorous that you'd kick proceedings off by...
With kicking.
With some gentle shin rub. I don't think that's how...
That is how it works.
Not qualified to talk on
sex. I am. And okay. It is the recipe for love. That is the appetizer. The footsie is the appetizer for the main course. Full-on intercourse. Full-on intercourse, main course. There's something there.
You didn't quite find it though, did you?
Nope.
So Yvonne is shocked at the wet foot, understandably.
Yeah, that's not how you expect the footsie to go.
Gary needs to think on his feet. And again, his responses as he comes up with his excuses to what happened. Great, you can see the cogs at work. That's what's so brilliant about Nicholas Lyndhurst's comedy acting. Let's not pretend it's subtle. It's not subtle. It isn't. But it is a well-crafted skill that he's got there. You can see the cogs turning over. And you can see him formulating his get out. The way that he times those beats to get that across is really good.
Yeah, it's very good.
He comes up with the story that, oh, I was putting my foot on the sink to tie my shoelace and then it fell in the sink.
Which makes sense for Nicholas Lyndhurst / Gary because he does have very spangly legs like a spider.
I can't imagine being the height and build that I am. I wouldn't use a sink. I'd never get it up there.
You'd struggle.
That would be like a ballerina manoeuvre for me.
You would just have to go straight up. I just put my foot in the toilet. And then the person would go, well, sometimes
it happens.
Well, what did I expect?
So he's tucking into his chicken tikka masala. At this point, all his ads are bitter soup. His appetite's
still
there.
He's
forgotten about that quote he's got to do, though, hasn't he? He's got to do that quote
for the printing. 300 A5 leaflets.
Yeah, I can do this. 3,000.
3,000?
They've got their site set high at the, what do we call it?
Duckett's Dahl.
They want to really get the word out there. They want 3,000 A5 double-sided laminates. So he needs to do a quote there and then. It's all kept very secretive.
Because, in his little tiny book.
Because one thing you're not allowed to do in any television show is actually mention a specific figure of money. You're just not allowed to do it. I don't know why, but it never happens. If like people are talking about salarism and like that, they always write it down on a piece of paper and let the person see it. They won't ever actually discuss it.
Because nobody knows.
As a figure of money. It wouldn't be that hard to research what a realistic price for 3,000 leaflets would be and then have them use that figure.
That's true.
Instead, we'll just write it down and keep it a secret. Turns out that the offer's very cheap and the waiter's very pleased. More chicken tikka masala!
Hooray!
Hooray! Just what he needs. Double chicken tikka. Could have said no at that point. Probably would have been wise to.
You could have. In fact, if that was offered to you as a thank you, you could say, actually, no, I'm all right, thank you. I've just had
There's a polite way of doing it, yeah. I've actually ordered a full meal. I'm more than happy for the business that I will be generating here. I don't need more food, thank you. Which he does kind of try and do, but then Yvonne says, don't look a gift course in the mouth. Nice pun. Maybe he should have said, well, you have it then.
You have it then, you fat cow.
It would have been in keeping with the general mood of his communication so far on the date. So, yeah, he could have just done that. Off to the toilet again. Back in 1941, and the main course is on the plate. Old lady food that you were discussing before. That's what it was. There's
tough meat.
Meat and two veg. That's what you get in here. Mm. There's potatoes that are not to be wasted. And it's clear Gary's starting to struggle a bit now. He's eaten enough food. And this is where the comedy really lies. This is what you want. This is the payoff you want from two dates at the same time. This real physical struggle. Yeah. The endurance setting in.
Goya's potatoes.
And they do a good way of explaining it all away and making it carry on happening. Remember Potato Pete?
The
advice.
The friendly Potato Pete.
I'm not familiar with Potato Pete.
The quote Phoebe says about Potato Pete is that you have to eat your potatoes because otherwise it's as good as giving them to Hitler himself. Very harsh, Potato Pete.
You don't want Hitler to be potato powered.
No. Well, that's dark. Potato Pete, see him coming down the street, shouting his good things to eat. Get your hot potatoes from Potato Pete. Now hear him sing as he goes by. All the kids adore his cry. Love to hear him shout, ha, ha. Eat your hot potatoes coming by, by, by. Have them in the packet, take them home tomorrow. Have them in the jacket, or eat them where you are. He might say a lot, so don't be late. If you haven't got a penny piece, put it on the plate. Potato Pete, Potato Pete. Now he's going down the street, shouting his good things to eat. Get your hot potatoes from Potato Pete, Potato.
He is a potato.
Yes, he's
and he's encouraging you to eat potatoes.
He's a mutant, yes.
Mm.
He's a mutated potato man.
That wants you to eat potatoes. You'd have thought that if a potato came to life, he'd be like, don't eat my brethren! It was a bit Scottish.
Well, no.
Oh, it's Mrs. Doubtfire. I'm channeling Mrs. Doubtfire as a potato.
Susan Boyle.
Oh, potato! Don't eat my potato!
Or it could be...
Irish makes more sense from a historical point of view.
Or the other way around, where Potato Pete is so ashamed of himself that it's just end it. Make me into friggin' chips.
Look at me! I'm a monster!
I'm a potato!
If potatoes were people, it would make the preparation a lot more messy, because you'd have to like get all the gizzards and stuff out, wouldn't you, before you could pick it up. Yeah.
You're like at the beginning of Saving Private Ryan, all these potato bits are out. Oh, Potato Pete, your mash is everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about potatoes is that you don't have to gut them before you cook them.
Oh, I'm looking at potato skins in a completely different way now. Mm.
So, yeah, eat up your potatoes, irrespective of how much curry you've eaten. We speed up the to and fro between the 1940s and the 1990s now, which is the right way of doing it. This is what makes it feel more stressy, is that now we cut very quickly between the two, quicker than we've ever done at any other point in Goodnight, Sweetheart. And here we've got a more bedraggled-looking Gary Sparrow as he's being forced to eat all of this food. He lists off to Ron exactly what it is that he's been made to eat. So he's had soup, double chicken tikka masala, some other curry dish as well. And then he'd had, what was the meat that he was?
I think it was lamb. Yeah, it was lamb.
Lamb doesn't sound like very efficient wartime fare. If you've got a sheep, let it get bigger and then you get more food out of it.
What, cardigans?
And cardigans. Don't squander your lambs, that's what I'm saying. Next time there's a war, think it through, let your sheep get bigger.
Okay, well, bear that in mind for the next one.
That's the kind of advice that I think Potato Pete would give.
Mm.
Yeah. He'd do it in a song. Oh, think of the war, think of the war effort, let your sheep get big. Think you are, think of the war effort, eat up all the pig.
Eat up all the pig.
Mm.
Eat up all of it.
That was just off the top of my head.
Mm. You can tell you're a vegetarian.
Mm. Suet pudding was his last dessert.
What's suet pudding?
It's the right choice. If you've got somebody that's already too full, feeding them suet pudding is the right thing. Mm. It's a really heavy, doughy... When you get dumplings, they're made out of suet, but suet pudding is like a sweet variant of that. Really heavy, claggy, stick-to-your-ribs type pudding that you really don't want if you've already had double chicken
tikka
masala.
No, but you want it for the war.
But you want it for the war effort, yeah, because it's...
Padding.
Keep Jerry out.
Yeah.
He's also smuggled some of the suet pudding out to avoid eating it, and he puts it into Ron's hand.
Mm.
But very clearly, whatever he's put into Ron's hand, That's not the suet pudding he was eating.
That was Play-Doh.
It would have been funnier if they'd recreated the suet pudding because it was like covered in custard or something. Mm. That would have been much funnier.
Tell you what would have been funnier.
If it had been wet and dripping.
Or if, like a bird, Gary just regurgitated it into his hand.
No, that would have been too much.
You want some? Here you go.
Oh, this is all going on. He needs this to come to an end. So he devises another little bit of plot with Ron, where Ron's going to come in and drag him away from the meal. This is it. This needs to stop now. Because the women have had all they needed from this engagement. They've had their little bit of Gary time. My work here is done. Mm-hmm. I have satisfied these women. Now, Ron, come and get me out of here. So he goes back into the restaurants. Then a man comes into the restaurant. This was so good. This episode is really funny.
Yeah, it's a good
one. There are just repeated, just funny, hitting the mark, good gags. So he reacts too soon to another man that comes into the thing, thinking that it's Ron that's come in, only to need to do the same reaction a minute later when Ron
the
really
exact
comes
same
in.
Reaction.
Yeah, which is great. It plays so perfectly with the dramatic irony of us knowing what's going on more than the other people, and it just works. It works. Poor Ron. And he looks so sad in this scene. Mm. He's got his head bowed and he just looks so apologetic as he's being just torn into by Gary and by Yvonne for making Gary run away and have to go to work, even though this is what Gary wants. So he's all meek inside of Ron. Then the two of them go outside and Ron is still lapping this up.
Oh, he's loving it.
He thinks it's great.
Congratulates him on how well he beat him. It's like when you see a dominatrix beats up the guy with a whip and he's like, oh, thank you, madame. Oh, more.
No, Ron, some self-respect. And especially if your ulterior motive is to get into bed with Yvonne, this isn't going to impress her.
But then maybe there's a part of him that thinks what Yvonne will see will be the opposite of Gary, where it's like tough bossing, attractive quality, tough bossing. Treating your workforce like shit. Some women probably get off on that.
Tory women.
Yeah, specifically.
Anne Widdecombe would lap that shit
oh,
up, wouldn't
love
she?
It.
As Gary leaves him, he does have a moment of quiet contemplation, Ron, and does realise that actually he's just been made to look, in his own words, a complete git in front of everybody. Mm. He's right. Yeah, that did just happen.
Yeah.
That did just happen. He's escaped the curry house, but he's still got to make amends with Phoebe because she's not happy with all the time he's spending away either, understandably.
It's worse for her, I think. She's made this dinner. She's set this out. She had plans for the evening, not just a curry. Yvonne wasn't making this curry. She was still getting a curry. She was getting double curry because of all the business deals that were going on. Great. Phoebe was just there slaving away some crap meat and fish heads, probably all day. And then Gary can't even turn up. Well, there's the other thing as well. Apart from the fact that he's been sort of flitting between the two
and
dates.
He's bloated now to the point of overconsumption.
All the food. Mm-hmm. And Gary is going to smell disgusting. He's going to smell like fish and curry and like weird puddings and stuff. Bear in mind, Phoebe would have never smelled these aromas before. She's not going to understand.
You've gone away to the phone box and you've come back smelling of exotic.
Yeah, definitely doesn't smell like... It smells like cabbages down there.
Yeah, what have you been doing, Gary? Yeah, the smell.
It'd be gross.
Fish heads and curry.
And you've been drinking lager in the restaurant as well, so you have that sort of
wine,
burpy...
Yeah,
the
gassiness.
Burpy curry smell of the garlic and the... Oh, Gary.
Rather than address that, what she really wanted was for him to stay the night. I think, no, you don't want
Phoebe,
that.
Phoebe, I know this might be like new to you and unexpected, but you do not want to share a bed with Gary Sparrow after his curries.
No,
it's
really
the
don't.
Worst thing. It's a new experience you'll not be prepared for.
Yeah, so her ulterior motive and what he should have realised. How did you not realise what I really wanted from this, Gary, was for you to spend the night? You don't understand women very well. Never a truer word has been spoken. And it was nice to see that Gary didn't dispute that. He kind of gets that he doesn't get it. He's not completely unself-aware. And yet, at the same time, he is all the time. Although you say that, yeah, Phoebe should be more annoyed, he definitely had a better excuse for Phoebe than he did for Yvonne. So Yvonne's, I'm going to the toilet and I'm not coming back and I'm except my foot's all wet.
Not really.
And I'm doing that all again.
Not really. I don't think that was a better excuse. What he was saying was he had to go and use the phone because work,
important
spy
war things.
Work.
This isn't selling
no,
leaflets.
Yeah. But what's he going to do by using the phone? The bombs aren't going to stop. The Germans aren't going to go, oh no. Turn around, Gary's onto us. Back to Hitler because, you know, he knows. He's rang the boss. There's nothing that he could have done. So him having a phone, what information is he going to give? Well, I've heard from my sources that Phoebe is cooking fish heads. So it's off. That can't happen. So what I would have done, would have said to her, I'm supposed to be working. I might have to take one, but I'd actually rather just have a nice dinner with you. Stuff the war, and it would be a lovely thing. And then he would get his leg over. But no, he decided to go through this fast.
But he predicts the air raid and it appears right on cue, helpful. And that does give his story a little bit of extra gravitas. She'd even been to the chemist's, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So this is a setup for a joke, insinuating that she's been and bought some condoms, which was a big deal. But actually, she'd only bought him a toothbrush. So it's a toothbrush. Which is fine, it's a good gag. I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with was Gary's reaction. So when she said he'd been to the chemist, he said, oh, there was no need to do that. What does he mean by that? What he's actually saying is, oh, I'm not using any bloody condom. Not okay. Or, alternatively, it's all right. I've got a 10-pack in my wallet. Also not all right. Not okay, Gary.
I've come prepared. But the toothbrush thing worked out well because of all the curries. So
at the very least, yeah.
So that's something. If he did have to stay over, she could have said, Gary, anything to stop this. Smelly man.
Closing off, so he disappears again because the air raid starts. Closing it all off is another conversation with Gary and Ron in the street, which is really good. This was the perfect ending for it. For the first time, and I really do think this is the first time, he is properly confronted with the fact that, in no uncertain terms, what he's doing is having an affair. Mm-hmm. And Ron uses the phrase, you've got a bit on the side. Yeah, let's call this what it is for the first time. And still a really nicely written scene. Stella's got wind of what's been going on and giving Ron both barrels. So once again, Ron's getting it. We've already learnt that the price that he gave for the leaflets was way too cheap. Mm-hmm. So Ron's getting it there as well. Ron is just so long-suffering. And he's making the point that he is being a really good friend and he is helping Gary out like this. And Gary's actually showing quite a bit of gratitude. So the scene between them is actually really nice and it rounds everything off really well. It would have been disrespectful to Ron's character to not give him this speech at the end and to not have him realise everything he's doing for Gary. And I liked the way that that put a bow on the episode. And there we have it. Great, great episode. What we did this week was we put out on Facebook and on Twitter, we asked our followers, and if you are not following us, then please do. You can find us on Facebook if you look at Goodnight Sweetcast, and we are on Twitter at GNScast. Follow us on there because we will be letting you know every time that we're going to be doing a recording and ask for your thoughts on the episode that we're going to be talking about. Unsurprisingly, this got some reaction from some fans of the show because this is undoubtedly a classic episode. We got some feedback from Rob Peters who says that this is his all-time favourite episode. It's a hilarious plan, but it's also the first time we've watched Gary properly flesh out his philandering, calculating side. It's crucial to the show's universal narrative that he starts weighing up the extent to which each woman matters to him. He doesn't want to shun Phoebe's advances to give her the brush, but neither does he want to bolster the already growing rift between him and his wife. Which is, that's it, that's what he's doing. And yeah, that might be cowardly, and yeah, that might be a bad decision, but it's the decision he's made, and we're seeing it in spades in this episode. Nick Bowden's been in touch on Facebook, and he says about the episode, classic Gary, why disappoint one woman when you can disappoint two? Everyone has a bad time, and Gary doesn't care because he can say at least he was there, regardless of the fact that he contributed nothing when both women needed him and burnt his mouth in the process. Shame on Ron for encouraging this and putting himself in the firing line. Gary's suit is shit in both time periods.
True.
We didn't talk about that. He put on his suit, which he thought straddled both time periods, so he didn't have to get changed between the two eras. But he's right. It's a terrible suit. It doesn't look 90s. Doesn't look 40s.
He's not a suit man. Some people are. Some people aren't. And he is not one of them.
I remember this from when it was first shown, and I remember it going down very well in the room. A perfect example of Lyndhurst's ability to make Gary a sympathetic character whilst being a despicable human being. And that's it. That's why we enjoy watching it. If he was just a bad person, the show couldn't work. If he was a purely good person and made all the right decisions, the show couldn't work. It needs him to toe that line between the two. The difference being, it's not done entirely without criticism in this episode. And it's a little bit more obvious how he's letting down both women. And certainly Ron's comments are more pointed that he's doing something wrong. And
it's all fun and games. Until
Somebody puts their foot in a toilet.
Someone puts their foot in a toilet.
So thanks for listening. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time.
Yes.
We will be taking submissions for the Gary Lurie. I'm really sorry that that's not up yet. We're working on it.
We're trying to reschedule and get our house in order.
That's exactly it. We will also be releasing Wiki Shuffle every other week. Tune into that. And there's over 100 episodes out there now. So if you really want to hear more of our voices a little bit, I'm sure that we've talked about Chris's cereal habits.
We haven't.
In more depth. In 101 episodes of Wiki Shuffle, we've never talked about your cereal.
I kept that little nugget a secret.
Oh. There's other weird stuff about Chris that you can learn on Wiki Shuffle.
Yes, there is.
So go and listen to that. And we will see you again in 2 weeks' time.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodnight Sweetcast is a Wiki Shuffle podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter at GNSCast, or find out more at goodnightsweetcast.com.